Welcome to the Radical Mother Village. If you're new here, a radical mother is a woman poised in her power, ready to disrupt cycles of generational trauma, running through her family like wildfire. She's working to improve her life, the lives of her children, and shape the landscape of her community. If that's you, you're in the right place. This podcast is designed to connect you with the resources, inspiration, and the reminder that you are not alone as you embark on your journey of radical mothering. In this show, you can look forward to conversations with fellow cycle breakers, experts in the field of trauma healing, and discussions on the foundational elements it takes to turn your goal of breaking cycles of trauma into a reality with topics like nervous system regulation work, reparenting, and releasing trauma that's held in your body. I'm your host, Krista Bevan, an expert companion for radical mothers, and I'm so excited you're here with me. Now, let's dive in. Hey, mamas, welcome back to another episode of the Radical Mother Village podcast. I am your host, Krista Bevan. You may even hear a very special co-host in the background because I have baby girl with me. She woke up from her nap. There she is. And she is doing some babbling in the background while I get this introduction recorded because she did not sleep through my work block. So if you hear some baby babbling in the background, know that that is her. And maybe you can't hear it. I'm not even sure. And actually, speaking of baby girl, I want to give you an update. So we are almost at 100 episodes of the show, which is absolutely mind-blowing. I started this a couple of years ago now, and I just cannot believe that it's been that long and that there have almost been 100 episodes. And so I thought, many of you have been asking to hear baby girl's birth story. And so I thought that would really be a fun way to celebrate the 100th episode. So stay tuned. That will be coming. Okay, on to the subject of today's show. And actually, I'm going to go off on a tangent first and we're going to come back. So I'm going to say it. As much as I love, hi, honey, nervous system regulation work and think that it is the foundation for true, deep, and lasting transformation in your life, I also recognize it's not always the only thing that you need. So if you have done nervous system regulation work, if you have got that nailed down, you're nourishing your nervous system on a daily basis, you're doing all the things you need to keep yourself regulated, take care of yourself, but you're still feeling like things aren't quite the way you want them to be in your life. You're still a little unfulfilled. You know that there's more work that you need to do, more inner personal development growth work. Then it might be time to dig into a level deeper. And that's exactly what today's guest, Deb Blum, helps women to do with her program, The Whole Soul Way. So Deb, having been an empowerment and transformational coach for women for over a decade, has pulled together everything that she's learned on her own path and from her clients into a guided, self-paced online course and program. In this program, The Whole Soul Way, she is teaching you a step-by-step process to unhook from fear, conditioning, and other barriers to love so that you can truly enjoy the life you're in and experience emotionally deep and mutually fulfilling relationships. Deb loves to dive deep into subjects such as shadow work, inner child healing, self-love, nervous system regulation, authenticity, spirituality, and conscious living. And for all those reasons and so many more, I love Deb. I love her program. I cannot highly recommend it enough. What I love so much about the Whole Soul Way program is that Deb is really meeting you right where you are. So it's got content that's designed to specifically meet where you're at in your life rather than be something that's sort of formulaic and not necessarily applicable to you where you're at in the season of life. So I really love that about the program. She's tailoring it to you. And then she's providing experiential learning, which I am a huge fan of, to help guide you back to yourself over and over. So you're going to walk through a methodical program that's designed to help you on the journey of connecting to your true whole self deeper than you've experienced before. And one of my favorite parts about the program is the community aspect, where you are going to be held in a safe container of other women doing this work alongside you. From a nervous system perspective, social connection is absolutely crucial for getting the kinds of results that you want. So if you have been a fan of my work, I know that you're going to love Deb's. I cannot recommend this program highly enough. It perfectly dovetails with the nervous system regulation that I teach and really sort of picks up where I leave off and then takes you further on that personal development journey. So in today's episode with Deb, we are chatting about the way our inner child shows up as trailheads, walking us home to ourselves. We're talking about why Deb thinks our self-acceptance project needs to be greater than our self-improvement project, why self-love might not be the best goal to have and what we should aim for instead, and how judgments can actually be useful and what they reveal about us. So without further ado, let's hop into today's episode, Inner Child Healing, Reparenting, and Radical Self-Acceptance with special guest Deb Blum. Deb, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here with me.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
We were just chatting that I'm surprised that I have not had you on yet. You and I have known each other for a little while, and I just know this conversation is going to be so good. So I'm excited that we're finally connecting and making this happen. I was telling you, you're my first postpartum interview that I've done. I haven't actually done a live interview with anyone in probably 6 months now. I feel a little rusty. So hopefully you and the listeners can bear with me as we, as I get back into it here. Yeah. So Deb, a question that I like to ask people at the beginning, I actually have a new question. So anyone listening, you're going to hear the new question that I have come up with for 2023, which feels fitting for the work that we're moving into, is what legacy are you leaving for your children?
I feel like I could answer that question in many directions. I hope that I'm leaving the legacy of being brave enough to live your life true to yourself. Yeah. I think that's
Amen
it.
To that.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. If I look back and I see what was most important to me in when I was raising my kids, it was always, I remember saying things like, you know, I want you to hold on to yourself. It's going to be hard when you're in school because people are going to try to make you be somebody that you're not. And I always have your back, and like, who really are you? And what's the intersection of who you are with, like what you love, with what the world needs, like what's that, you know? So it feels like, but more important than what I've actually taught them, hopefully I'm embodying it. That's what I hope.
Yeah. Because that's where it starts, right?
Yeah.
The things we want for our kids, we actually have to embody ourselves to model to them.
Yes.
And that feels like such a secret. I feel like that's something that I didn't realize for a long time. And then it sort of dawned on me that that's the way that it needs to be. Yeah. That to be the change we want for them, we have to live that. We have to do our own work first.
Yeah.
If we want them to have a different experience of childhood than the one that we got, which is what, you know, radical mothers about giving our kids this different opportunity. We have to give ourselves a different opportunity first.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. And I also wanted to say my kids are now 18 and 20, and I started this work when they were about maybe like 6 and 8, I think. And so as much as I wish that I had known this before, I actually think it's beautiful to do it alongside raising our children. I don't think that that's a bad thing. I actually think it's a beautiful thing. And they become a mirror for us where we get to use it as almost like a feedback loop with each other. So sometimes I wished that I had known this prior to having children, but in retrospect, I think it's beautiful. And yeah. And I would say also it helped me to do inner child work while raising them, because I felt like I was like, oh, when I'm parenting them, I'm parenting me. Like I almost could see the parallel path of the two. So I used to always say, and I say this to my clients, is that you basically adopt a child. So mm-hmm. now, like, instead of having two children, I had three children. I had my own self and them that I parented along the way. So yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I want to get into inner child work with you because I know that that's something that you can speak to so beautifully with so much experience, and that that's something that you work with clients on. But before we go there, I want to go back to something you said about how old your boys were when you started this work, because I was actually having this conversation with someone the other day, and I want to address this because this is something I hear a lot, both a concern and a worry, and also a bit of a regret sometimes with moms that I didn't start this work when they were babies. I didn't start this work before I had children. And I just want to call out two things. One is that a lot of radical mothers don't start this work until their kids are a little bit older. And number two, even those of us like myself, so my personal experience was that I actually did a lot of this work before I became a mother. I actually delayed having kids on purpose because I knew that I needed to do so much work before I was going to be able to step into that place. And even having had that experience, I still think that there's something about motherhood that teaches you lessons you can't learn until you're in it.
Yeah, that's so well said.
And that you haven't missed out on anything. You're exactly where you need to be at exactly the right time to be learning the lessons and doing the work and doing the growth work that needs to happen when it can happen.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I wanted to say that I don't know why this just popped into my head, but I just want to say it because it did.
That's a good reason.
I believe regret also is I would call it like an ego trickster move, meaning like it could be a thing that keeps us from doing the real work. So regret's such a useless thing unless it propels us into action.
Yes.
Because it's like I can look back and see all the ways that if I had done my work earlier, it would have been better or something. But literally, I can't change the past. So it's like my kids got what they needed. Like they may have needed some of the ways that I parented before I was more conscious. I don't know why. I don't know, but I'm not going to go down the path of thinking that I did something wrong or I was a bad mom or that I should have done it better, because the truth is whenever we know better, we do better. That's just the reality. When we know better, we do better.
Yeah.
And it all happens in divine timing. Just as you said, it's not, who am I to say whether it was too late? I mean, how could I? It's not my job to decide that.
That's a really good way to put that. Yeah, I agree. And regret just keeps us looking backwards instead of looking forwards to possibility. It keeps us in this stuck place as opposed to changing things and moving forward. So
I think it is actually like it's almost by design, a holding pattern, unless you decide to use it as that catalyst to do something about it and move and look forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I agree. Okay, so let's go back to where you were taking us, which is inner child healing work and this idea of when you have two kids, you've adopted a third, and that's your own inner child. So I think that most of my audience is probably familiar with what their inner child is, but some people may not. I know it's something that is gaining in popularity, thankfully, because it's so much needed work for all of us. So can you just let listeners know how you see what our inner child is and how we can start to work with her?
Yeah. I think that our inner child is all of the parts of us pre-now. And I literally like look at it and say, it's just when we think about it in a classical way, kind of like the definition of it, it's usually us when we were younger. And often it's our wounded parts. Like that's often what we think of. I mean, there is also often the inner child that we might have cut off from and abandoned that was our joyful, playful innocence, right? There are a lot of other parts of us. But when we think of inner child work, most of us are thinking about healing our inner child. And that's because it's the parts of us that got wounded. And it's usually parts that got a little bit stuck in time. So they were... something happened. And again, I want to just be really clear that this does not mean that this was something that a parent or somebody did on purpose. It could have been trauma. It could have been like real trauma, like I say, capital T trauma, you know, but like abuse or something. But it often is more like misattunements. And I want to just caveat that too. I know for a fact that there's been lots of studies done that attunement doesn't have to happen 100%. So when I say misattunements, like I do not want anyone to walk away from this episode thinking that they have to be attuned to their children constantly. That's not what it is. But when things happen, you know, kind of over and over again, patterns that we have of misattunement, ways that we have, you know, a child who needs something and mom and dad isn't a mind reader. And we're going to miss the mark on things. And a child is going to have perceptions of things that are off from what maybe the intention was. All of that stuff ends up with a human being, a child, cutting off from parts of themselves. And so when we get older, we can go back and we can find our inner child parts and we can grow them up. And I like to think about this as I say to people, because no one is ever going to get 100% perfect parenting, because I don't even know what that would look like, but just it's even almost hard for me to imagine, since nobody will. And when we're 18 years old, none of us are going to be emotionally and psychologically fully mature adults, or even 26 years old when they say we're more mature. I still believe we're not emotionally and psychologically mature. We have to pick up where our parents left off. And so we have to look at all the ways that we didn't get our needs met, the ways that we're longing for certain things that we didn't get when we were little. And we get to go in and give that to ourselves. But most of us unconsciously are seeking for other people to do it for us. So basically, like I will speak for me, that I was always seeking for my husband to provide for me those unmet childhood needs. I didn't know it though. I thought that's what relationships were. I thought that was what I thought, you get into a relationship so that he can complete me. He can give me all the love that I didn't get and, you know, treat me the way that I needed to be treated. And I didn't know. I didn't know that that was inner, that was my young parts. I didn't know that was my child parts. I thought that that was what relationships were, but I have learned that that's not true.
I have learned that too. My ex-husband and my current husband have been very different experiences because I did a lot of that work in the in between each of them, because I was very codependent on one in the beginning. And even just the language that we use by calling them our other half implies that we are not whole.
We are not whole. Yeah.
Without them in the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So when people are getting started with inner child work and they're coming to you for that, how does someone connect to those parts? How do they identify, this is my inner child, or this is coming from unmet needs or misattunements of my inner child? How would someone know that?
Well, okay. So I feel like there are two pieces to this, because there's one, which is the, like, how do we, are you asking how do we connect the dots? Like, how do we connect our maybe present situation to the past, or how do we actually connect to our inner child?
I guess both. We can address both.
Okay. Well, the connecting to the inner child parts very variable for everybody. So I have people who do best with hitting it right on the head. They actually can go into meditation and find their inner child, and they can connect right to their inner child, and they love that. I have people who they do much better when I actually separate it into brain parts. So I tell them, like, your amygdala, which is, you know, your fight, freeze, fear response center, is your, I call it your inner protector, which, by the way, I consider your inner protector to be a child part as well. But your inner protector, and then, like, your, you know, your limbic brain, like, that's your inner child, and your prefrontal cortex is your adult. And sometimes people like to do that type of thinking. Some people really like to think of it more like they're being their best friend. Some people like to think of it from a leadership idea, like, I'm leading my inner child. So I definitely feel that I open up the channels for people to do it however they want. Some people, it's just, they like to have a conversation with themselves. It's not about an inner child part. Or some people really love the parts idea, like, this is one part of me, and this is another part of me, and that's another part. So one of the things I think is a big mistake that people make is believing that everybody connects to their inner child the same way. Some people can visualize, but other people can't. So we have to make sure, I feel like it's important to tap into the many dimensions of the inner child and allow each person to have their own experience of it, and to not make an experience wrong because, or right, because one of the challenges of inner child stuff is that We also meet different parts of ourselves at different times. And I really believe we're ready for whatever. The best way to do inner child work is to meet the part that is actually emerging rather than trying to go in there and like intentionally be like, I'm going to go find my inner child parts, you know, like with this kind of like, I'm on a mission. It's like, no, you're always being shown what part is ready to be seen, which leads me to the second part of the question, which is like, how do we know? Well, for most of my clients, it's usually through behavior. And the reason why I say that is because most of my clients are more like out the outward, like getting things done. They're high achiever, kind of like women who have achieved a lot of success. But I say that with a caveat because I don't mean success looks a certain way. It could be success as a stay-at-home mother. It could be success as in a corporate job, building a business, whatever. But in their mind, they have done the things to check the boxes of the things that they should be doing. It might be success by finding a good man or something, but they've achieved those things they set out to achieve. And so externally, they have a lot of really great things going on in their life. And a lot of them have done a lot to avoid their emotions. So they're not necessarily saying, look, oh, well, I found my inner child because she feels sad. A lot of times it's not. Maybe they find their inner child through anger, or maybe they find their inner child. I call them trailheads in my program. I call them trailheads. So I basically say we have all these trailheads that are happening, and they could be anything from a coping mechanism, like overfunctioning is one that is very common with my audience. And I'm not sure about yours, but a coping mechanism with food, with maybe like avoiding conflict. Maybe it's through a way that you like people please, or that you're always trying to be perfect in everything that you're doing. So whatever your coping mechanisms are, whatever your feelings are, can be a lot of times. I think that people have like what maybe we would call secondary emotions, which are like anger, like frustration, irritation, things that are like on the surface, but underneath it, there's actually pain and you know, inner child like voices. So basically I call the ego the inner protector. So all the ways that our inner protector shows up, she's out there saying like, I'm going to fight the good fight. I don't want you to have to feel those painful feelings from childhood. I don't want you to have to face all that trauma. I don't want you to do all that. So we're going to keep you externally oriented. So I like to tell people the pathway in is by looking at whatever's showing up in your life. And so often it's like, how am I blaming somebody? How am I judging somebody? How am I, you know, what are the ways that I'm, you know, in the pantry when I don't want to be in the pantry? And how did I get here? Why am I eating food right now? Or whatever it is. Those are entry points to find our inner child. And so those are trailheads that I say, walk you home to yourself. The trailhead actually guides you to that part that's ready to be looked at. How does that land for you?
I think that idea of trailheads is really beautiful, bringing us back to ourselves. For me, one of the things that has helped me connect to my inner child, and also this was another conversation I was having with someone else, that our inner child is not just one thing, but we have inner children.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. There's our inner child at different points and stages and ages in our past that still exist as parts within us.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really beautiful reframe. But for me, having small children has been a path to connecting to my own inner child, because it's easy for me as I'm rocking my daughter to sort of see myself as that baby.
Yeah.
And connect to what I needed as a baby, and thinking back on what I know of my childhood and what I experienced of my childhood, and being able to look at those places that I may have experienced those misattunements.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so for me, it's then an opportunity as I'm rocking her to really be rocking myself at the same time, right? I talk about, so my daughter right now, when we're recording this, is 4 months old. So I spend a lot of time in the rocking chair with her, right? And so I like to say that at this point, I've rocked three babies. I've rocked my son, I've rocked my daughter, and I've rocked a whole lot of myself in that chair.
Beautiful.
And that our children can really be a pathway to our inner child. What they're demonstrating, what they're showing us in behavior that might be triggering us.
Oh, yes.
Can be a doorway to these parts of ourselves that maybe didn't get what we needed when we were their sort of age and stage of life.
100%. In fact, I learned that I actually stopped what I would say believing that my kids' behavior had anything to do with them until I did my work. So like they would do something, I would be triggered. I would say, okay, wait a second. Before I do anything, I need to go inward and I need to see what's going on inside of me and do some healing work there. And then once I've done that, then I can see the situation clearly. Mm-hmm. And there might be something, right? There might be something that they need to learn or something that we do need to change in our environment or something like that. But I always felt like I couldn't see clearly until I had done that work. And I'm right there with you about, I felt like it made it easier to connect with my inner child because I was raising my children at the same time as I was going through it. And I would say to my inner child, like, whatever I say to them, it's for you too.
Yes.
You know, whatever those loving words are that I'm saying to them, these are for us, mm-hmm. not just for them.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that I tell clients is when you're reading parenting books and they're giving you advice, think about that advice applied to yourself. Mm-hmm. The way that it's advising you to sort of behave or interact with your child, are you treating yourself that same way? Mm-hmm. Because chances are you aren't. And again, back to this idea of we need to embody the change that we want for them in the same way that we speak to our children. Are we speaking kindly and lovingly to ourselves?
Yep.
And chances are a lot of us are not. Talk about a misattunement. There's a misattunement with how we speak and view ourselves and how we speak and view and interact with our child. And how can we bring those into alignment?
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. And it's not always easy, but it's really important. And it's really part. And it is the bonus of doing the work while we're raising our children.
Yes.
Because we really do get that opportunity for sure. And I'll give you one other thing that I feel like, another like little trick I use with people about how to find what your inner child needs is that I tell people, get out a piece of paper and put it in your pocket and bring a pen. And all day long, whatever it is that you wish somebody would do, like, I really wish my husband would have just listened to me instead of giving me advice. Write that down on a piece of paper. Just write down, listen, no advice. Oh, I wish my children would appreciate all that I do. Appreciation. Oh, I had my hands full and that person didn't open the door for me and I just had to stand there and I felt so powerless and incapable. Oh, you want to feel more competent and capable. Whatever it is, you want more help. You write it all down and then you look after a couple of days and that's your list of all the things that your inner child is longing for from you. Not from those other people. I mean, yes, from those other people, but they're really just reflecting your own inner longings, and your inner longings are actually for you to give to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Especially too, because I feel like so much of what we needed as children from our parents that we didn't get now as adults, that ship has sailed for the most part, right? And that's where this idea of reparenting our inner child comes in, so that we can then offer ourselves those things that we didn't get.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. And let's just be really clear. I don't think people should do this for this reason, but what will happen is because the outside world is often being a mirror for what's going on in our inner experience, as we begin to provide those things to ourselves, that gets reflected into the world. So people do start to listen to us without giving us advice. People do start to help us more, or we feel like we can ask for help more, and then they meet that need. So I have found that it's almost magical.
Totally. Yeah, because you are living in a different vibration. Are sending that out to receive that back.
Yeah.
Completely. And when you change that dynamic, when you change the dial on the radio station that you're emitting, of course, it's going to get reflected back differently. It's going to get reflected back differently in your partner. It's going to get reflected back differently in your coworkers, in your friends, in your family, in your children.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is a very nice side benefit of doing all of this work, right? Hey, mamas, I am excited to introduce you to the sponsor of today's show, Pure Spectrum, who makes a line of different CBD and hemp products. I have been a big fan of CBD for both anxiety management and nervous support for many, many years, and I love Pure Spectrum's products. You know how much I am a fan of activities that nourish your nervous system, and so for me, CBD is definitely one of those things that I can do to help support my nervous system. The benefits of CBD use include better sleep, pain relief, reduced stress and anxiety, improved focus, reduced inflammation, and so much more. CBD has even been studied for its benefits for the management of PTSD with some really good results. So, Pure Spectrum offers a line of different products, including tinctures and gummies and soft gels, lots of different ways to take it internally, but they also have a variety of external options with topicals like lotion. They have a really amazing face cream that I have been using and loving. It is super moisturizing, which my dry winter postpartum skin is absolutely loving. As a sponsor of the show, they're offering 15% off your order when you use code RADICALMOTHER. So that's all one word, all in caps, when you go to check out. So again, it's code RADICALMOTHER to save 15% off your next order. And you can find the link to their website where you can place that order in the show notes. Okay, back to today's episode. Deb, you have said something that really stood out to me, and that is that our self-acceptance project needs to be greater than our self-improvement project. And this just struck a nerve with me. And also, kind of back to the beginning of the conversation around regret, it also makes me think too of this idea of looking forward as opposed to backward. So can you just speak to what you mean by this idea of our self-acceptance project greater than our self-improvement project?
Well, to me, it's still inner child stuff to a large degree, because what we're really doing, most of us have learned to keep doing better, to keep improving ourselves, and like fix our problems, right? Like, there's something wrong. I've got to do something about it. I'm going to solve the problem. I'm going to, you know, fix my marriage or fix my this or fix my, right? And so we're always working on improving. And I don't think that the reason why I think it's important to not say, stop trying to improve yourself and just accept yourself. It's like the reason why it's like creating the container, that it's a bigger container of acceptance than the container of improvement, is because we all do have things that we want to improve. And I don't want to discount that. But the problem is we're usually trying to improve ourselves because we think we're lacking, because we think that we're deficient. We think that we need to do something more in order to be acceptable. And the biggest reason why that is not effective is because what we tell our inner child over and over and over again, she's not enough. She's not good enough. She needs to be better. There is a problem, which is exactly the message most of us got through our childhood. Even if we didn't get it from our parents, even if our parents were really supportive, we got it from siblings, we got it from peers, we got it from society, we got it from media, we got it from teachers, we got it from all these other people. So it was a constant thing that we basically internalized this message that you always have to be doing better and doing more. You're never okay the way you are. So then when we do it to ourselves, we're just inflicting the same wound over and over and over again. And so at the end of the day, we end up with an inner child who feels like, oh, again, now this parent, inner parent, is doing the same thing to me. I'm not enough. I have to hustle for my worth for this one too. And so she needs to know that we are going to accept her, and we're going to give to her the thing that she never got, that unconditional acceptance and love. And that doesn't mean that we together, me and my inner child, don't want to do better. But it's like, we first have to come in and be like, you little one, I love you. I love you exactly like you are. And if you didn't ever, you know, change or anything, I love you. I'm with you. Or at a minimum, we need to include her as she is. And then we have to sort of move toward acceptance and love. But it's how do we get to that place where we accept this whole thing, me, brain, heart, body, everything, skin, everything. And then once we've come into that level of acceptance, we'll know more what we want to do to move down the path toward more expansion, more evolution, more growth. But we've got to go back and claim her in her beauty and glory and messiness and you know, mistakes and flaws and whatever else. Like, and be like, all right, we are this conglomeration of all of this. And I'm going to come into acceptance of that before I go on. And I believe acceptance of our life too. Acceptance of like our life, like as it is. And then we kind of have like a foundation of acceptance from which we can then soar into, you know, higher heights. So, definitely. And I think if we don't do that for ourselves, we inadvertently are continuing to cause the same. We're really perpetuating the wounds from our childhood.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense when you put it that way. It's so two things. It's like, it's embodying this idea of yes and. Yes, we love and radically accept ourselves exactly how we are, and we can make space to improve on things.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I was going to mention about that is, you know, listening to this, I can see how some people might be like, well, that sounds nice, but how do I actually do, like, how do I actually love myself for who I am without changing anything exactly as I am showing up right now? And to me, again, it comes back to this idea of would you treat your child the way that you're treating yourself?
Yeah.
Do you love your child unconditionally, even if they can't spell every word correctly, even if they can't ride a bike, even if they can't tie their shoes yet? Of course you do. And there's room for them to learn those things.
Yeah.
Right. And totally. The same exact thing is true for us.
Yes. 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 And there's this part, it's an interesting thing, this whole dynamic, because I really do get it. Like, I really do honestly get it. But in a lot of ways, we're so arguing with reality because, you know, it's like we have these parts of ourselves that if we look back in our life, we can see over and over again, I've always been a person who, I don't know, can't remember people's names or something like that, right? I'm just going to give an example. And maybe I beat myself up over it over and over again. Oh, what is wrong with me? Why can't I remember people's names? Or, you know, I'm not good at math or something. Oh, it's so annoying. I'm not good at math. And we hyper-focus on these things that aren't our gifts, you know, that are difficult for us. And we literally don't accept our reality. Like, I don't know why my brain doesn't do the same things. Like, my husband's brain is like he remembers everything. He's got this scientific mind. I can't think that way. That's not how my brain works. And I could focus on all my things that I'm lacking in, or I could focus on the things that are amazing in me and that make me unique and interesting. And I can include space for the things that aren't. And that's okay. So I invite people oftentimes to consider the word include instead of love, because like, can you at least just include that these parts of you exist? Can you just say, I see you? Even if you don't want to love that part, you're like, I see you. I'm not going to reject you anymore. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful starting place, is non-rejection, AKA inclusion. Yes. Start there. You do not have to love every aspect of yourself in order to come into radical acceptance of yourself. That's one of the, I have actually a video I did about this, about like love it. Choose include instead of love. I think love might be a stretch for some of these things, and we don't have to. Eventually, I think we get to the place where we realize that, like, I can love all of that. But at a minimum, it's like, you know, like our kids, we may not love aspects of them, like, I don't know, ways that they're super loud or something like that. But can we at least just say, and I see that part of you, and I accept and welcome that too, even if sometimes it's hard for me to handle?
Yeah, that's a really, I think that's a really great point to make, that the leap to loving ourselves might be too much. So what can we put in place to get there, or at least be on that path, whether we get there for every part of ourselves or not? I think that not having that be the goal necessarily right out of the gate makes a lot of sense and is a lot more approachable and attainable for people to feel like they're not failing at this, right? Because self-love is such a buzzword. We tell people to love themselves and then they're looking in the mirror going, I don't love this though. So then there's something else wrong with me that I don't love myself.
Totally. You know, Matt Kahn always says, love whatever, wherever you are. So basically, like, if you can't love yourself, love the part of you that can't love yourself. Mm-hmm. He's like, just love whatever you are. Nothing, it, like, instead of, because otherwise we do go down that path of rejecting, you know, rejecting the thing that we can't, oh, I can't figure this out, or I can't.
It's another thing I'm doing wrong that I can't get right. I can't even love myself.
I can't even get that right. Exactly. So yeah, I'm with you. And the fact that you also called out, and I think it's really true, that I don't know that we'll get to the end of our life and have loved every part of us. I don't know. I'm not sure. But every part. So if you think about yourself as a, you know, when we're born, like, we're whole, and at some level we're all whole. But in our mind, we have this fragmentation. Mm-hmm. We have parts of ourselves that we've banished, you know, into the unconscious mind, and parts of us that we are conscious of and that we want everyone to know about ourselves, those kind of quote unquote good parts, right? And that means that we live this split existence and we kind of are fragmented. So if you can imagine that every single bit of you that you just are willing to shine a light on and be like, oh, I see you, procrastinator part. I see you. All right, you're welcome here too. That means it pops into the conscious mind. There are two things that happen there. One is you actually will be able to do something about it now because you're like, oh, I see you. And two, you will feel less fragmented. You will feel more whole because you have brought it into your conscious awareness and you have now reclaimed another aspect of self. And wholeness equals aliveness. Wholeness is truly a feeling in your body. And it is that path to feeling more balance, harmony, happiness, inner peace. So every tiny piece is worthwhile. They're incremental and they add up. So it's not like you have to have done 100% whole. You better be 100% whole or else you're going to not be happy. No, it's totally a journey.
Yeah. When you're saying wholeness is aliveness, how that lands in my body is how I feel when I do embodiment work. Mm-hmm. When I feel fully in my body, whether that's I feel good or I feel bad or that my shoulder aches or my foot is asleep or whatever it is, as long as I'm aware of that and I feel it and I'm grounded and centered in those sensations, then I feel alive. When all of those pieces of me are pulled into this skin suit container that I exist in,
yeah,
it is a sense of aliveness. You're right. Yeah.
Right. What I hear you saying is you're not rejecting or resisting. You're not resisting the pain in the shoulder, the pain in the body, whatever. You're like, all of you are welcome here. And so when everything is welcome and you're honoring and acknowledging it, basically, you know, you're integrated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and embodiment. I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I think that for me, radical acceptance is really more of a goal than self-loving every piece of me.
Yeah.
But that to me is a far better aim to have in my sights than loving every single piece of myself. Because I don't think that that's realistic. But I think radically accepting every single thing that I bring to the table is something that I can do.
I think that's really accurate. I feel that feels right for me too.
Okay. Well, we agree on that then. Good.
I feel like we might agree on a real lot.
I think we do. I feel like this is a good segue though to asking you the question, which is, how are our judgments a good thing? How can it being judgmental of ourself actually be a really wonderful thing?
Well, I like to say that I think judgments in general, judgments of others, judgments of ourselves, they're useful and they come back to being a trailhead for us. Mm-hmm. So I really do think that it would be beautiful and will be beautiful when we don't judge others. But it goes back to the same thing of like, it's almost like what you're just going to turn the switch off, you know, like that just doesn't work. So I think I ask people sometimes like, well, can we stop outwardly judging? Meaning like, do we need to actually verbalize our judgments? But I still would say like, if I had my choice, I'd rather you verbalize them than to suppress them.
Yes. Same.
Judgment feels to me like the same thing. It's like, it's just an outward expression of inner stuff, right? It's just an outward expression of whatever's happening inside of us. But if we believe our judgment is true about another person, that's where we get into trouble, including if we believe that our judgment is true about us. So I like to think of a judgment's a trailhead. Let me step back on this for a second. I believe that I'm going to use the word self-love here, even though I do agree with you that I think self-acceptance is a much more, I think it's a radical self-acceptance is probably a much better phrase for this. Let me see if I can use it with radical acceptance. I'm going to see if I can change it. Okay. I think I can. So radical acceptance must include acceptance of the parts of ourselves that we fear are most unlovable.
Yes.
And so what I think judgments do is shows us exactly what we fear is most unlovable, mm-hmm. what we wish wasn't true about us, what we don't want other people to know about us, what we think is bad about us. So if I judge another person, you know, you've heard probably before, right? Like you spot it, you got it, or like you point one finger out and three fingers are pointing back to you. And people call this projection, like in the psychological terminology, it would be projection, which is that something that's inside of me that I don't want to know about me, or that it's in my unconscious mind in some way I've rejected or cut off from, I project it onto another person. So I blame that person. Brené Brown says something, this is totally botched, but she says something like, I judge in another person that which is in me, but only a little bit worse.
Yes, like, so, yes. And that's how very Brené.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, she's so rude. And it's like, yeah, well, she's ruder than me, but I actually can be rude too, or, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And so same thing when it's your inner judgment, right? Like if I'm judging myself for doing something, it's just showing me another thing. Oh, look at that. Like I am not satisfied with that part of me. I feel that part is not okay in me, which means I'm rejecting that part in me. And so I'm going to go back to childhood. We learned from everybody what's acceptable and not acceptable ways of being, because that was part of socialization, conditioning. Our parents weren't comfortable with certain things that we did. They wanted to teach us manners. So all these things that were not acceptable, we cut off from, we rejected, we exiled, we pushed away. Well, if we don't accept radically all of those parts, we're basically perpetuating the wound of self-rejection too, right? So we're saying, yeah. We're saying, well, they rejected me and now I'm going to reject me too. And that's why radical acceptance is the key, because it's like, it goes back to, again, we're going to say this, like including that part is even good enough, shining a light on that part and being willing to look at it and not keep it. I do not have that part. That is not me. You know, that's what most of us like, that's not me. That's them. Those people are bad. Those people do those bad things. I do all this good stuff over here. I'm kind. I'm loving. I'm generous. Selfishness? No. Disrespect? No. Rude? No. You know, mean? No.
Totally. And I think the other thing that we tend to do with judgment. So I think that judgment is just part of being human. Just like ego is a part of us, right? But I think where the problem lies is when we start to be judgmental of being judgmental, which attaches us to it, as opposed to having a judgment, watching it come up, saying, look at that. I judge, you know, like I'm being judgmental of this, and then letting it go and reflecting on the ways that that might be something that is contained within me.
Yeah, I think that's really reasonable. I think that the problem is that we often do miss, we often go to either we judge the judger, or we just allow it to flow through, but we never do the inquiry. And so that's the part that I think is the final part you said, which is I'm a big fan, and the whole, my program is all about self-inquiry. Really, it's about self-inquiry. So it's for a lot of times for people, you know how like you go into meditation and you're like, you listen, you watch your thoughts. Like for me, that was just too hard for me. I can do it now, but for years, it was just too much for me. So self-inquiry and journaling was really my way of doing it. So I'm always like, listen, we go in and we look at what meaning am I making of this? Why am I saying this about another person? Where do I do this too?
Yeah.
Where would I do it if I walked a mile in their shoes? What might I do that? You know, where do I do this toward myself? Mm-hmm. You know, and so if we go into inquiry on it, we then get to see the roots of it because it came from somewhere. And it usually is an inner child part that is actually wounded and wishes to be seen and known. I believe every inner child part, they just want to be known. They're like, why did you put me away? I'm useful.
I mean, it's literally like my 4-year-old son saying, mom, look at the Lego tower I built. Look at the Lego tower I built. Look. Our inner child is doing the same thing.
Totally. She just wants to be seen. She just wants to be known and she just wants to be included. And then from there, we get to choose as adult, whether we actually do the thing, mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Like for example, if you are a person who's like, let's just say you consider yourself to be kind, right? You're kind. The opposite of that, I don't know, you could maybe say is mean, right? If you looked at two polar opposites. But to me, if you go too kind, you go to self-abandonment.
Yeah.
You go too mean, you go to other abandonment. Mm-hmm. There's somewhere in the middle, which is like an embodiment of that. The energy of mean means like I can stand up for myself. The energy of kind is I care about you. What about if we bring a little bit of that, like come more to the middle on all of these instead of these polar opposites. I'm either kind or you're mean. No, we have to be in both because otherwise I'm not going to be able to set a boundary.
I was just going to say we need a middle ground. Otherwise we're just people pleasing ourselves away or we're just pushing people away.
Exactly.
We need that middle path.
Yeah.
There's a time and a place for both of those to ebb and flow.
Right. But if you reject mean in you,
yeah,
then you will keep going further and further and further toward kind and wonder why people, you know, are walking all over you and wondering why people are mean, because actually what you're doing is attracting the polar opposite because you keep going more polar. If you come back into the middle, the other people start to mirror that. It's honestly, I really believe people are always calling us back to wholeness. Yes. We're always being called back to wholeness somehow. So that's been my experience and what I see often with other people. And you're spot on. It's like, we've got to come back. We've got to find that middle ground.
Yeah. Well, speaking of wholeness, Deb, tell us about your whole soul way. I'd love you to shamelessly plug yourself and the work that you do.
Oh, I love shamelessly plugging.
I thought you might.
Yeah. Well, so the Whole Soul Way program has been launched multiple times as a live cohort program, but I am right now launching it as a self-paced journey with the option for people to add on group coaching and one-on-one time. But the Whole Soul Way program is really a process that I teach people on how to do all of this work that we just talked about here, but in a more methodical way where we can start to notice and unhook from all of the fear and the programming and the conditioning that we've experienced so that we can take a self-leadership role in our lives and really truly come into a relationship with all of ourselves and feel like we're more in choice on how we act, being able to remove barriers that we have to love and the barriers to connection. Because ultimately, I really believe that every one of us here just wants to love more and connect more and live more fully and really be our true selves, but we're scared to do it. And so we need a process to understand how to do it in a way that we can create the inner safety that we need in order to be able to put ourselves out there. And I also believe that it's done in community, which helps people to see that, oh, I'm not the only one that has like the impulse to be mean at times, or I'm not the only one that, you know, is struggling with this problem over here. And And then we get to realize that all of us are actually much more messy when you get underneath the veneer and the masks and the armor and all of that. So yeah, so together we drop the armor. And I think it's a really unique program because I think that there are a lot of people who talk about how to maybe like shift from ego consciousness into more like divine love or something like that. You know, people talk about this, or people talk about even inner child work or shadow work, but there aren't a lot of places that actually take you on a journey, not just information, not just teaching you what the definition is of shadow work and the definition of it. But I feel like the program is really experiential in that it actually guides you back to yourself over and over and over and over again at the pace that you need, while looking at your specific triggers in your life, not like, oh, you should be working on such and such right now. Like, I don't come in and tell them the next thing for you to work on is judgments. No, what's up for you? Is it judgments? Is it anger? Is it shitting on yourself? What, you now know how to go down your own path to you know, find yourself in there. So thank you for letting me talk about that. It's, I've been loving it, and I am in absolute awe of the women. And you know what really is very frustrating for me is that it took me 12 years to figure out so much of this stuff. And I, in 15 weeks, was able to have women wake up to things that it took me forever to figure out. So I love that part too. It's yes. Like, on the one hand, I'm like, dude, I wish I knew this. On the other hand, I'm like, I'm so glad that I can help people see this, you know, see this and transform in these ways.
Well, that sounds amazing. And I love the community aspect for the nervous system regulating component of that, because anyone who's listened to past episodes of the show know that nervous system regulation work is my jam. And there is something to be said about doing work in community with others that makes it better and easier and more effective. So I'm glad that you include that piece in there, because I think that that is so, so important.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Thanks. Yeah. I'm glad. I love what you do. You know that, you know, I do, because I have a part of my program that is nervous system regulation. But at the end of the day, if that's not there, it actually is kind of hard to do this work.
Yes, it is. Yeah, agreed. Deb, if you could go back in time and give yourself a piece of advice as a younger mother, what would you tell her?
I would say, you're doing great and it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
It really, really is all going to be okay.
All right, Deb, I appreciate you for coming on, for sharing your wisdom and your time with us today. The last thing is, where can listeners connect with you and find more of your work?
Yeah. First of all, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure. I have had so much fun talking to you. And so the easiest way is to go to my website at thewholesoulway.com. And there you can find social media links, and you can also find my freebie gifts and anything else, and also more information about the Whole Soul Way program.
I was just going to say, and sign up for the program. Exactly.
I would love that.
Yes, perfect. And as always, I will put that link in the show notes for people, so that they can find you and go check out Deb. Deb is a wealth of knowledge and has lots more that she is just wonderfully skilled at sharing with the world. So thank you, Deb. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
All right, mamas, that wraps up another episode of the Radical Mother Village podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, will you do me a giant favor and share it with another mama who might love it too? You can also share it on social media and tag me. I'm on Instagram at the Radical Mother Village. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week.